Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, April 18th, 2006 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. First item on our agenda is a request from visitors and speakers from the floor. Would like to start by calling on Brian Kinahan in connection with Earth Action Fest. Yeah, please come up to the microphone.
Hello. So I'm here with Blair Pollack, and I'm representing a nonprofit organization called Earth Action Fest. We're holding the second annual Community Earth Day event on April 30th, which is two Sundays from now, at the Town Commons. Our purpose is to raise community awareness of everyday ways to reduce the human impact on the environment and to raise money for the Chapel Hill Carrboro Schools to purchase green energy from Duke Power through a nonprofit alternative energy organization called NC Green Power. This is our second year. We did this last year. We conducted it in Chapel Hill. We have a march and we have a fair, a walk and a fair. We have planned the walk this year from Weaver Market to the Town Commons, which we have reserved for the afternoon of the 30th. Last year in Chapel Hill, we had the walk using one half the street. We had about 100 people, and we had the police escort in front and the police escort in back, and the street was not closed. It was just a slow-moving group, and we'd like to be able to do that again this year. I guess I asked for lenience because we didn't understand the process when we were in Chapel Hill. There were different rules, and I understand this year somewhat belatedly that there may be others here in Carrboro in terms of street closing, although this is not a street closing. This is just a slow-moving group. So I'm here to ask, you know, what's the process, if possible, for getting that approved? And then there's another piece that I don't know if we should handle these together or separately. But there's another piece about food vendors at the Town Commons.
My understanding, well, why don't you just in two or three sentences explain what the issue is about the food vendors?
Okay, essentially we would like to have food vendors that are making the food, selling the food, and I guess there's an issue about if they make a profit, if that's appropriate to the Town Commons. And I think there's perhaps an alternative possibility, which is where they would donate the profits to the event, because we are a nonprofit, Earth Action Fest is, and so that would be an alternative. We only have about three or four vendors. We have about 40 booths, but only three or four food vendors.
And they agreed orally with the notion of donating their profits to the activity.
Okay. And as I understand it, the staff has been kind of reviewing this question, so let me turn to the staff for some reaction on the food vendor issue real quickly.
Yeah, under the ordinances, the board revised it, has revised it with respect to sales of goods and merchandise at the Town Commons or the Century Center, those two facilities. You can be either a private, a profit, or a nonprofit making entity can sell sales of goods and merchandise as an exception to the general prohibition on commercial activity on town property. So it really, it basically doesn't make any difference whether it's profit or nonprofit or whoever it is. As long as they properly reserve the facility, they can sell goods and merchandise, food being a good. Even if it's not good, it's still a good.
Hope he's good.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Well, hopefully it won't be bad anyway. All right, so I think that that resolves the issue about the food vendors for now. And so the question is just about this, I guess it's basically a parade permit issue. Mr. Manager, do you want to comment on the situation?
Just briefly, I mean, there is a permit application process that goes, is supposed to go to the Public Works Department for review, because it would involve at least the Public Works Department and our Police Department in I know what you said about it not being a street closing, but I think we would look at it as a street closing because traffic can't travel through there while the parade would be taking place. So there is a review process. There is also a public hearing requirement, and there, which has to be advertised in the newspaper prior to the hearing. There is a public hearing night next Tuesday night. So while the normal process is at least 7 days in advance, that's not in the code. It's just practice. The applicant is normally required to pay all costs associated with the street closing. There's an application fee, and then the whatever cost is associated with providing labor and materials for a street closing.
And I think I recall from last week or the week before that one example street closing, not necessarily this street closing, but one example of it was going to cost in the range of $700 to $800.
This one would, and staff knew nothing about this except almost by accident today. So we have almost no information other than what we just heard. But based on making some assumptions, and George Sizer, our Public Works Director, is here, we assume somewhere around $300 to $400 for this kind of process. As I think I advised the board, there's also a section in the code that the board may require liability insurance. It's not a shall, but a may require. In recent past, there have been several events where that was a requirement.
Steve, why
are we not able to do what they do in Chapel Hill with marches, which is, you know, to have the police car in front, police car in back, and not actually close the street?
Well, I'm not saying we couldn't do something similar, but again, we're just hearing about this right this minute, which is, I think it's a little unfair not to have had an opportunity to at least talk about it. But it would still be, in essence, a street closing. I mean, traffic can't be going through there while there's a parade going through. And we certainly can consult with Chapel Hill to see what they've done.
Okay, because I've been at, the Martin Luther King Day march. Mm-hmm. You know, typically there's a police car waiting at the end of the rally, and people just line up behind it. And then there's one car that goes ahead to the intersections, or maybe more, you know, and just closes them. And so, you know, it's a little bit less involved than, you know, closing.
That very well may be, but again, we're being hit cold with it, and I'm not aware that we've normally done anything quite like that. Doesn't mean we can't.
Okay. At the same time, now, sort of related to this and sort of not related to this, let me ask you this, actually. What time are you? Would this proposed march would have been 2 p.m.? Okay. All right. Well, I think the other issue, if we can come back to this in just a moment, if you'll have a seat for just a moment, I would like to call on Catherine Devine to. What's that? Or Brian, actually. Okay. So if you would come up and speak for a moment.
I'm Catherine Devine. This is Brian Risk, who co-wrote and produced It's Carrboro, our town's latest hit song.
Sweeping Orange County by storm.
We're here to ask y'all to repurpose the scheduled public hearing on 425 to talk about a street closing on Sunday the 30th of April, the same as...
same day.
The same day that Blair is asking for, different times of day. We might could piggyback if we collaborate a little bit. What we have in mind... Question?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Closing the street from Main Street to Greensboro Street for 2 hours. for a choreographed group shot for the video of It's Carrboro.
And the idea would be, as hopefully all of y'all saw, I sent out an email about this, I guess, yesterday, suggesting that it seemed like after conversations with area business owners that there was some very strong opposition to the proposed street closing that we had been planning on having a public hearing about for May, an April 25th public hearing for a May 21st street closing. When this issue had come to light, I, in discussion with Catherine and Brian, had suggested that we basically just modify our agenda for next week to change from a street closing public hearing for March 21st to a street closing public hearing for April 30th. And I think we could do that potentially. But, you know, then in the last 24 hours, the situation with Earth Action Fest has come to light. So I don't know what the board's pleasure is in dealing with the situation, these two situations.
Well, they're both good things.
Absolutely.
Have both groups made sure that this is the only alternative, that a parade around the farmers market wouldn't be fun, or that doing the filming, changing the script just a little bit and doing the filming at Carrboro Day or during a farmers market or something, so you're both sure that this is the only thing that will meet your needs?
Oh, well, for such a creative endeavor, of course there are always alternatives, and you know, you could cut it entirely. What I had envisioned for this initially was, when the song was written, it was posted online as just sort of a novelty song. You know, my roommate and I wrote it and produced it in our house right over there. And but then I said, hey, it'd be fun to make a video. Here's my email address. And it was just sort of flooded by email and local.
What'd you say, 2,000?
Not 2,000 emails, but it's been downloaded over 2,000 times, which is approximately eighth the size of Carrboro, I think. And
that's a great song. I mean,
thank you.
I enjoy
Carrboro.
It.
It's anthemic for sure. But the idea was that once all that response started coming in, was to find a way to incorporate all these people,
right.
You know, and so a group shot just seemed to make sense. And that section of Weaver Street is gorgeous. It's, you know, it's well known. I mean, and like, could even feature the businesses in the video. You know, like, that's sort of the point, is it's like a commercial hub for Carrboro, and the length of it is pretty much perfect in terms of doing the song and walking at a fast pace from one end, or like sort of medium pace from one end to another.
So you're talking just the block that Weaver Street Market's on?
No.
No, you're talking from
the Fido, you know, the RBC Bank area.
To where?
From Greensboro to Maine.
Country Junction to Fido.
Oh, okay. Oh, so not including Weaver Street.
Nope.
Okay. And Blair, y'all really need to do it like on the street.
We've advertised the event for that day, and we've advertised it as a parade. Then, you know, conceivably it could go down the sidewalk, but
okay,
it'd be probably a lot quicker.
Well, I mean, we're not the ones that advertised it before it was approved, so I'm not going to feel bad about that. But so you feel like you need to have it there. So but can you combine on times? Because it would be like really not cool to close the street at two different times on the same day. It's not cool to close it to begin with, but to close it two different times is very uncool.
We have yet to advertise anything, so the time is it's just, you know, a time to set, really. Right. So the sooner the better is what we were thinking. But if we could piggyback, that'd be great.
Plus, you'd have even more people there, and you'd have a very Carrboro thing happening right there.
Right.
So maybe we say yes, but we're kind of curmudgeon-y about the time. And
what is the time?
Alex?
Understanding that, obviously, as Jackie said, Blair, you know, you advertise something that you haven't approved yet, you're kind of winging it. Now, you haven't really set your shooting schedule
yet.
We
are very flexible.
Right.
And we were thinking early morning.
So, but even the date, I mean, you do you have people scheduled to come out and shoot?
There's no
an equipment run and all that stuff?
Weekends are better for everyone to get together. That was the general idea.
It strikes me that the extent to which you can talk to Blair and see if there is some sort of coordination that you can come up with in the meantime, if not, since your shooting schedule is fluid, as you put this thing together a little bit more and Steve has had a chance to cogitate on what these needs are, then maybe we could, if a coordinated approach doesn't work out, then you could be flexible on the date and talk to staff and see if we could find a date and a time that would work for you. And
Alex, here's an issue. If this is going to be considered by the board next Tuesday night, there's got to be a public hearing notice in the newspaper before next Tuesday, and there has to be something in there about it.
We would have to decide basically right now.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Yes, please. What time does Blair want it closed?
2.
We're fine if, we figure our event will run from 2 to 3, that everybody will be at the town commons who's going to be on this parade by 3. So we'll be done.
Oh, and your
kickoff time is 2, and it takes about 10 minutes to walk down the street.
So if we
get a late start, it's 2:05, I think.
So are you parading from here to Weaver Street?
From the Weaver Market?
From Weaver Street to here.
To the town.
The event, the Earth Action Fest event, is going to take place on the town.
So
it's a subset of that, essentially.
So we could potentially, if the board desires to do so, we could change our the subject of our public hearing to a possible closing from 2 to 4 p.m. on April 30th.
This is our hope.
Now, I still have the issue that, I guess basically that over the course of the next week between now and the time of that public hearing, y'all would need to come to some agreement about how exactly that's going to work out and how the cost of the street closing is going to be divided between y'all was the other thing I would suggest. And I think we do need some kind of formal application. I would say the final thing is that the notice to the adjacent property owners will need to go out
mañana,
right away tomorrow morning, if y'all can work on that.
That's been described to us about what our duties are. The application is written out. I'd like to point out one other thing. This is not a frivolous application. This video has legs for the town of Carrboro for fundraising and economic development purposes. It's a tool. Brian is giving us if we can raise enough money to pay for it.
I certainly recognize the value in it and be glad to help be involved in raising some of the funds that are needed.
So, Mark, were you suggesting that that at the public hearing we would have some, specific agreement between these two parties on the payment plan between them, and that we would have some assurity of that? Is that kind of implicit?
Right.
Okay. And I would just like to ask staff, is this doable, the turnaround time to get this listed for public hearing?
If we can figure out what it is everybody's asking for, I think we can do that. But the other thing is the ordinance requires that the adjacent property owners be notified, and our procedure is 7 days in advance, which means you all are going to need to be out on the street tomorrow.
We will be there tomorrow.
Handing out notices to the affected businesses as to what's being proposed. I apologize, I was trying to listen to you all and listen to George's concerns, because we're trying to figure out, it sounds like there are two different sections of streets. You all need the section from Greensboro to Main.
We just want the easy part.
Well, that's your definition.
The easy part's the sidewalk.
They're requesting, I think, for the entire thing.
Right.
And
you only
if
want
we wanted, if
you
we,
only want a piece you know, of it.
If well, moving I, the cars would be think, too much, and just giving us the whole thing is more of an issue than you know.
I'm imagining that both that the closing would be Greensboro to Weaver Street, and they can use the crosswalk to get across Greensboro Street from
Weaver Street. Yeah, I think we're asking for the same segment of street from North Greensboro West to where Weaver re-intersects
right.
Main.
Yeah.
Except we're going to cross then to whatever this little segment is called here across from Town Hall.
So we don't have to close it in front of
Weaver.
In front of Weaver Street Market.
No, we'll just right. aggregate on the green and then just cross the street.
Okay.
Fine. So it's the same section.
That's a lot less complicated traffic-wise.
So people could go down Main or whatever, so it would be that much of a
better. And there are fewer businesses that are open on Sunday. I mean, there are some.
I'm sorry. There are some, but there are fewer.
Some. I called Fido a little while ago, and they're not open until noon.
Well, they're... Yeah, but you want
yeah,
to.
I was only asking
about Brian's project.
Right, right. We had been talking about early in the okay. morning for Brian's project before, but all right. Well, is there a motion we can put this on for public hearing? And I think y'all can take some responsibility to sort out some of the details between yourselves and with our town staff. And you know, this just because we're having a public hearing doesn't mean we're having a street closing, but. Is there a motion to go ahead and...
I move that we have Kat and Blair, the Earth Action Fest, and the film folks come together and work out what your time is, share that with staff, and then look at the street closing from North Greensboro to Town Hall from 2 to 4 on April 30th. Public hearing for next Tuesday.
To set a public hearing
and,
for next Tuesday.
And also to speak to the business owners tomorrow.
Of course.
Steve.
If they need the street from 2 to 4, it actually is going to need to be closed for longer than that because we need to have time to set up. So I'd say towards 1:30 to 4:30.
Is that half hour before half hour?
1:30 to 4:30.
And there is an application process, and I would... ask the board to request that the applicants fill that out because that gives us some basic information to work from.
Right.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow, right.
Is that part of the motion? So that if they don't get the application in by tomorrow, then we're not going to have a public hearing.
Which means
I think that's
Earth Action Fest needs to do an application.
We need not to dilly-dally. All right. So that's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Can I make one more comment?
Yes.
Brian, it occurs to me that in this video there's a promotional value for a dozen or so car row businesses, and I imagine you've thought of this already, but you know, there's significant opportunity for raising funds for some of the costs, you know, with the help of those businesses.
Of course.
Just want to suggest that.
And
sure.
There's significant promotion of Carboro.
Right.
Could we have $100?
There's no soliciting in the building. Sorry.
You guys know how to use the listserv, right?
How do you spell chutzpah? And that's
pretty good,
right.
Though.
It never hurts to ask.
That's true.
If you can't ask, okay.
Who said
local government doesn't make momentous decisions?
All right. Thanks very much to all of you.
In other words, no.
No.
Not from the town, not right now. I have a note here that says Beth would like to speak. Was this on, is Beth still here and does she still want to speak?
Beth, do you want to come forward? Yes, I mean Heather, I'm sorry.
Heather.
That's right.
Sorry, I misread it.
He doesn't speak English very well.
Hi, my name is Heather Gibathese. I'm a student at UNC and a resident of Carboro.
Yeah.
I am here today to invite all of you and anyone here as well to the Global Warming Conference or Summit this Saturday from 10 11:30 to 2:30, and it's going to be at the Carrboro Century Center. And this is really important because Carrboro has been really good at looking forward and environmental sustainability. And this is just another time to gather together and to look forward and seeing what we can do as a community. So there's going to be a lot of people there, and it'll be a good time to get together and talk. So I know some of you have already RSVP'd, and it would be great if some more could come as well. Another important thing that we will be discussing at the summit is a possible bike loan program that we're trying to implement in Carrboro, Chapel Hill, and the university. And I work with Surge, which is a nonprofit in Carrboro, so we're starting to organize it, and also the Recyclery, which all of you have probably heard of. And we've already got like 20-some bikes spray-painted Carolina blue and starting to put the fleet together. I know we have a few bikes put together already with recycled material, and all the bikes have been donated and things like that. So we would love to have the town of Carrboro support. I know we have some support already from some of the board of aldermen, and we'd love to see the town officially support this project. It'll be great to get people around easier, more, you know, just, you know, it's a way of removing ourselves from fossil fuel dependency and just, you know, having a, you know, more of a community feel around the bike program. So it'd be great if you guys could fit us into your budget possibly, or possibly space in one of your, like the Carrboro Century Center or any places. So that would be great as well. So, and we're already asking support from Chapel Hill and the university, so we're working with them as well. So if you guys have any questions about the bike program, you can ask me or later get in contact with me. But so you're all welcome to come to the summit this Saturday, and also we'll be discussing the bike program there as well. So.
All right, great.
Thank you very much, Heather.
Thank you. Heather, you've done a great job in the last five months?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of progress. Yeah, this started the end of last year, so
December.
We're already moving forward fast with the bike program.
Great. It's a great program.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a couple other people who've signed up to speak on matters that are not on the agenda. Is Billy Madden here? There he is. Come on up, Billy.
Thank you, Mark. Last time I came here to speak to the board, I wanted to support you all in the decision that you all were going to make to complete the seventh member of this board. And I stand behind that as well. I know that there's a lot of flack in the newspapers for the decision to continue on that way, and I want to tell you that I fully support you. I think you all are just wonderful folks as well, that very lucky that Carrboro has you on the board of aldermen. And I say that not just because there's a possible 13 votes here for the Weaver Street Market co-op position coming up this October.
I see.
You say ask us for money, not ask us for votes.
No, I'm not going to ask you for money.
All right.
There's one thing I do want to talk about, and that is this weekend is I've been in this area for 16 years, pretty much 14 of those here in Carrboro. A semester and a half, one year and one semester in Chapel Hill. But this weekend is the one annual event that makes me want to leave town. And that has to do with, in spite of the fact that I am a motorcyclist, I have my motorcycle endorsement, and I enjoy motorcycling, Carrboro is infested with motorcycles for the after chill. And I'm not going to ask you to close down 100 East Weaver Street for this Sunday afternoon on such short notice, but I would like that if you get a chance in your own personal schedules, swing on by if you can and see what it's like so that next year we can find solutions to abate the loud noise
Well, actually.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Update.
Jackie?
We have a plan.
Let's hear this plan.
I have to ask our manager to tell everybody, because I guess we should tell the whole town the plan.
Well, I don't know that I have all the details in my head, but except to say that basically around the perimeter, we'll be encouraging local traffic only coming in and out of the downtown of Carrboro, because we are very aware and sensitive to the issues that took place, particularly last year, where we had absolute gridlock downtown and Anderson Park was totally taken over by a group of nice music, John.
Jeez.
This is dueling phones.
Hey.
He's calling me. He must be calling me.
The conductor of this work.
a group basically took over the park last year. And so we've been, since right after Appletill last year, we've been in contact with the folks in Chapel Hill. Our police chief and myself sat down with the Chapel Hill police chief and manager last year to talk about the issues that faced Carrboro as a result of Appletill and Aftertill. And again, we'll have areas around the perimeter where we'll be encouraging folks who don't have a legitimate reason for coming through to we'll try to detour them and go into Chapel Hill for the Appletill Festival. It's not a roadblock. It's not a checkpoint or anything like that, but we will try to our best to protect the neighborhoods close to downtown and to protect the interest of downtown. But there won't be a perfect system. There's a ton of traffic that will result, but we are trying to think ahead, and we'll have a fairly large number of staff out on Sunday afternoon and evening.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. It's not so much the traffic to me. It's the roaring noise as you're sitting down at the picnic table at Weaver Street Market, enjoying a good conversation with one of our neighbors, part of our whole community spirit, and you can't talk to him because you're waiting for this barrage of motorcycles to go by. Thanks. Well,
hopefully that will be somewhat less this year.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll assess it.
Look forward to discussing the successes of that, hopefully. All right. I understand we have at least one more person who's here to speak on an item not on the agenda. But it looks like we have a bunch more people. Pete McDowell.
I'm Pete McDowell. I'm the program director of NC Warren. And what I'm here tonight for is to ask the town of Carrboro to co-sponsor an event that we're doing next Wednesday, which is the 20th anniversary of the Chernobyl disaster. We're calling it a remembrance for the future. What we'll be doing at the event, which will be at McDougal Middle School, is talking about what really happened at Chernobyl. And just in brief, it was the worst industrial accident in history, with a total radioactivity release 200 times that released at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and projections are that 30,000 to 60,000 premature deaths will result from that. So we're not only commemorating and looking at what really happened there, but also looking at what could happen here. We have been working on issues of nuclear safety for a long time. We are within 15 to 20 miles of the Sharon Harris plant, which we've had serious concerns with in terms of safety and security, and which is now looking at tripling in size with a projected two new reactors and relicensing of the present reactor. We will have, in the second part of the program, we'll have Jim Warren of NC Warren talk about safety and security issues at Sharon Harris, and then look at the evacuation plan. And And there we will have the Orange County Emergency Management folks, the NC Division of Emergency Management, and we've also invited Progress Energy. So we would like to ask the town to co-sponsor this event. It's going to be held in Carrboro, and you are downwind.
So, are you just asking us to put our name on the event?
Yes.
Co-sponsorship?
Right.
Okay. Well, I'd like to move that we do so, and also let everyone know that I'm, in honor of this moment, I'm wearing my brand new Ukrainian shirt that my courier delivered last Thursday from not far from Chernobyl.
I'll second.
Should have brought my Geiger counter. All right.
Yeah. Dan's glowing.
I was going to say, that's a very cool thing.
Resolution. or the motion has been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you very much.
Matter passing
unanimously.
And
hope you all can come.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Ellen Perry, and then David, do you want to speak as well? All right, so Ellen, if you would come up.
Okay, work issues. You all want me to give you all an update on the state CPAC and the LME situation tonight, or would y'all plan on coming back? I can.
I think it might be better for us to discuss it at another time, simply because that's coming before.
That's fine. I know. Also, quickly, Carver Day is coming up. We need volunteers. Especially for children's activities.
What's the date?
It's May 7th, and we have a volunteer day, and we have the volunteer day is the 3rd, and it's going to be hopefully in here, because the Century Center is being redone on the floors.
Okay, so people who are interested in volunteering to help out with Carver Day
can get in touch with carver@carver.com.
All right, there's information at carver.com about how to get involved.
Also, the 32, and I won't bother. I mean, the utilization review junk that we were looking at, the Carmen Hooker Odom has decided to do value options, all value options. So that kicks out every LME. So I think we need to strongly, and I was talking to Mark about putting all this mental health reform on the agenda, on the legislative agenda.
Yeah.
Because we need to.
I think we had some, I don't know if we formally adopted that, but we had at least a brief discussion about those issues in relation to our legislative agenda. And if it's agreeable to the board, we'll make sure that this is a topic that we bring up with our legislators when we meet with them.
And Brola is Brola is chair of that, or co-chair of that committee, the LSC. And Ellie is, I keep Ellie informed. I keep Mark informed, so Mark should keep you all informed. So, and I'm very concerned about everything that's going on.
I think we're all very concerned about what's going on.
You all want me to come give a report sometime?
Let's catch up about that later this week, and we'll make a plan about how to get the.
I was just trying to make sure that y'all were informed. I want everybody informed. I just don't want this board informed. I want the whole state informed.
Absolutely.
And that's something very important, to inform the state about what's going on. And the DD population, and everybody else.
Absolutely. It's going to have a huge impact on all of us.
And the county commissioner's race. They don't know. They didn't even know that DD population was in the mental health form. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we need to make sure that everybody knows.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you all.
Love you, Ellen. Yep.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
And will you make sure that you all please make sure that y'all invite everybody to Carver again.
We'll do.
Daily. I mean,
every time we meet.
Yeah.
When we want to. Every time we meet.
Thank you.
On May 7th.
Thank you.
We'll do it.
May all right. 7th.
Okay. Thanks very much, David.
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, I will be brief, and no, I don't need a road closed, nor do I need any money.
Then you can have it.
There's no problem,
we're
right? I am moved to speak by two things that have occurred in the past 7 days. One is the actions and discussion of this board last week concerning how we appoint, elect, bring to this board a new member when we have the situation we had this past time and your discussions last time. And then the editorial in the Daily Tar Heel yesterday, 41706, that speaks to several of those points. The Daily Tar Heel made several good points that I will be brief and just take off on. I'm concerned that we continually seem to think we need to appoint somebody, the board needs to appoint a person. The board needs to appoint a person. Members of the board, Mr. Mayor, it's a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Not of the board, by the board, and for the board. Not by any stretch of the imagination. If we want to be efficient and effective, why not let's just elect a mayor and let the mayor appoint six members of the board? I thought that would get a smile out of Mark. That may be incredibly efficient. It may make the wheels of the town run very smooth because seven people will be in lockstep. That's not the point of representative democracy at all, and I think you're moving away from that. I am very discouraged by the tone of discussion that seemed to discount Alex Zafran's comments about let's do the fourth highest. I remind Ms. Gist, you remember, Mr. Zafran, you do too. The rest of you don't remember this. But when Diana McDuffie was the fourth highest vote getter, I stood right at this microphone and said, appoint her the next member of the Board of Aldermen. I'm not a Johnny-come-lately to this issue. I said that many years ago, and I still believe it. That's the way you do it in a representative democracy, where the people make the decisions, not the board. Please read the Daily Tar Heel editorial from yesterday, still available online. Mr. Coleman, this is not an attack of you of any stretch of imagination. In fact, I disagree vehemently with them describing you as a political crony. That is an insult to you, sir. I disagree with you many times, but you're very vehement and you're very true to your beliefs. You're not a political crony. You are a longtime activist. I'll have to agree with that part. But anyway, folks, you go with the fourth highest vote getter. I look forward to a public hearing on this at a later time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
For us old timers, just to give, or for the newer timers, David was too modest in not reminding us that in that year that he encouraged us to appoint Diana was a year that David had, in fact, run for the office and came behind and so he spoke on principle then, and David, I think you're speaking on principle now, and I thank you.
All right. Food for thought. Thanks. With that, we are on to the consent agenda. Before we get to that, could I ask you all if you're so inclined to not have the public hearing on the May 21st street closing to take action to cancel that hearing, even though it's been advertised? We can put something on the website.
I took that as implicit in the previous motion that it was
okay.
The motion was to change that public hearing from the one to the other.
Okay, I missed that.
We can make it take a second.
Do you need an amendment?
Plus
so moved. Yeah.
All right, it's been moved that we cancel the May 21st street closing public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Thank you.
And actually, the other thing, before we get to the consent agenda, Alex and I have not quite put the finishing touches on our agenda item 5, and I don't think there's anything especially pressing about it. So if I may ask y'all's indulgence, I'm going to propose that we just bump item 5, appointments to the Chapel Hill Small Area Plan Committee to coordinate development plans in the West Franklin, West Rosemary, and Main Street area item to a later date.
That's good.
Could you refresh my memory about what you two were going to discuss?
Well, I think we wanted to define the scope in terms of the subject matter and the geographic scope of those discussions before really fully agreeing that we want to propose back to Chapel Hill that we had set some ground rules, basically.
I think we were going to have a conversation just about reaching some sort of understanding of what we thought a reasonable scope would be, not just in terms of geography, but in terms of subject matter as well, I think. We haven't even gotten started talking about it, but the idea, Mark, as I recall, is that we were going to bring some ideas back to the rest of the group, just so we had a starting place to respond to Chapel Hill. Mark, is that your understanding?
Right. Okay.
I'll just send you all some emails. Before I forget them, I wrote them down. So.
All right. We look forward to hearing that. So we're going to drop that from the agenda unless there's an objection to that. Okay. So with that, the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Okay. Item 1 is approval of the minutes of the previous meeting of April the 4th. And item 2 is appointment to the Human Services Commission.
Move the consent agenda.
Second.
Comment? We should note that there's a revision. There's revised minutes that are in our place. They replace what was in the packet. Do we need to specify the revised?
So we're adopting presumably the revised minutes in your motion, whoever made the motion.
I did, and so noted.
All right. The consent agenda, with that clarification, has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Item D1, courtesy review of potential development application for 100 Roberson Street.
David Ripperton is interested in discussing certain policy issues with the board prior to possibly submitting a development application for 100 Roberson Street. To that end, Mr. Ripperton requested that the Board of Aldermen conduct a courtesy review of conceptual information related to this potential application. Conceptual design materials related to the policy issues are attached. Town staff request that the Board of Aldermen review the attached information and discuss the potential project with Mr. Ripperton.
David? Marty, is there anything you've got?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
Good evening. I'm here representing the owners of the property, Darcom of North Carolina Incorporated. They would like to develop the property where the old Andrews Rigsby Hardware Store site is into a multi-story mixed-use building. And there are three issues that are that I'd like a little feedback from you all on that could potentially affect the footprint of the building. And what we'd like to do is get as much information as we can before we submit the application, just so we don't have to go back and spend more time and money on the plans. This is the basic concept of the building. You can see, the pointer is the three issues that we're going to discuss or that I'd like to discuss have to do with the right-of-way, the new right-of-way along Roberson Street and Carr Street parking along there. This is an aerial view of the site, the existing building right there, Roberson Street. And in February of 2003, you all passed an amendment to your ordinance to allow 68-foot right-of-way along Roberson Street. And on each side of the right-of-way, you had 5 feet of landscaping adjacent to the street and then 10 feet of sidewalk on the inside. So that would be on both sides of Roberson. And this shows the schematic plan that was approved. You can see there February 2003, 68 feet of right-of-way, 5 feet of landscaping each side, and then 10 feet of sidewalk. And one issue that I think, or what we would like to do is change from 5 feet of landscaping here, like on this side, change that to 5 feet of sidewalk, and then 10 feet of landscaping, and then we have an additional 7 feet of sidewalk, and this would be the property line here. So we're adhering to the plan, but just not exactly in the same format. And I think it's actually better, because when you have cars parking right along the curb, you're going to have doors opening out, and you don't want them opening out onto your landscaping. So I think it's potentially kind of a hazardous situation. And if you've ever been to the 35 restaurant at University Square, it's like a hurdle you have to jump. It's the same situation where you have landscaping adjacent to the street. It's very difficult to get in. So that's one issue. This shows an aerial view of Roberson Street. And this is the rescue squad. The right-of-way would come right up to the face of it. So those parking spaces would have to be reconfigured. The Open Eye Cafe actually projects into, it's only 32 feet from the center line of the road to the face of the building, and there's a new ramp that projects 5 feet into the right-of-way. And this would be, this is our site, the existing building. This would show the footprint of the new building in a schematic form. And the yellow areas would be the projections. And we could move the whole building back and not project into the right-of-way at all, but I think we're adhering to the spirit of the ordinance. These would be open underneath, so you could walk underneath them. And right now, with all the right-of-way dedication, we're giving up about 14% of the site as designed right now. So if we move it back, these two project 5 feet, and this projects 8 feet, so we'd have to move it back even farther to align it with the face of the right-of-way. So it just doesn't seem like a very efficient way of handling that. And we don't want a plain, flat surface along there. It would be easy just to lop those off, but it adds quite a bit of interest to project out like that. Breaks up the mass of the building there.
David, would the projections that would come out that you're imagining, would they go up the full height of the building?
Some of them, not. They'd all three be at different heights. Just to conform to kind of the irregularity of the town right now, uh-huh. The asymmetry of a lot of the buildings.
Okay.
So that would be the second issue, projection into the right-of-way. And this deals with the third issue. These are the projections again. There'd be parking along here. If during a development review board meeting, a member of Public Works said, why don't you put parking along Carr Street? And really, we hadn't considered it, excuse me, because we thought the neighbors would be opposed to it. But it does give us 8 more spaces along there. The right-of-way would have to be increased to 50 feet. It's 40 feet right now. And then this is actually an entranceway into the open courtyard.
So it would be, I think it would be advantageous for us to have that parking there. So those are the three issues. And I know your responses are non-binding, but we thought it would be advantageous to us, or helpful to us, to get some feedback and some opinions from you all on those three issues.
I actually have some questions for staff, the attorney specifically. This is a sort of a global question. If we allow this type of encroachment, what precedents, if any, does it set? And that's my question.
Well, I think the reason that it's here, and it seems like an appropriate question to bring in a concept review, it's typical of the kind of thing that the process is designed to deal with. That is, it really is a policy question. So in answering your question, it would have precedential value to this extent. What they're being asked is sort of as a policy matter, not the specific absolute size and orientation of those protrusions of buildings over sidewalk rights of way. And I take it's not over the road right away, but over the sidewalk. Is whether, as sort of a conceptual matter, our ordinance doesn't address it one way or the other. The only thing in the town code that addresses anything over rights of way has to do with trees and overhanging natural features, not buildings. So it really becomes a policy direction that if you say, yeah, we don't have a problem with seeing that, then you are establishing a policy or position, if you will, that would not be limited to this. If the next person that comes in, we would certainly say, well, the board is not opposed to it as a matter of principle or general policy. And so you'd have to treat each case, obviously it depends on exactly where and what it looks like and all that other sort of stuff.
Right.
But it's really basically asking you a question that's a general question, which is there a position that the board would take on whether to absolutely opposed or open to having buildings extend over the right-of-way. That's an illustration of the kind of thing. So it does have precedential value. Yeah.
And I'm going to ask a couple more clarifying questions so I make sure I understand. So we're not talking about footprint encroachment. We're talking about overhang encroachment.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the overhang is part of the footprint. There will be a physical structure within the right-of-way. It's not just an open overhang.
But it won't come down to the surface.
It's not a cantilever.
Right. I mean, because to me, there are different types of encroachments. There are, I don't want to say underhang, but it is physically footprint encroachment.
That's on the ground.
It would be open, it would support the columns.
Right. Or overhang, which to me is different.
Well, let me be clear now. Okay. The columns themselves are not in the right-of-way.
They would be in the right-of-way within the sidewalk, not within the road right-of-way.
That is a little different than I'd understood.
There you go.
But again, that's not what I understood, but I just have been clear. I mean, I thought the question was whether or not there could be an overhanging such that my understanding was that there wasn't going to be any intrusion, any physical intrusion at street level into the right-of-way, but that there would be an overhang, so there wouldn't be any passage obstructions of that right-of-way.
There would be columns at the corners supporting the structure.
That's very helpful to know.
Okay, well, it is. I guess we haven't, that was not my understanding of the issue that was being posed, so that's what this meeting is about. So
well, clarification. Talk about it.
I have just one more.
Go.
It's a follow-up.
Report.
So in the past, have we allowed right-of-way this type of, well, now it is a footprint encroachment. Have we allowed it ever?
To my knowledge, it's not occurred. I do know that there have been signs that, and Marty, you can help me with other signs that still exist, that do overhang the right-of-way, and whether we allow that now. I certainly know that there have been, and I think still are, signs that overhang rights-of-way.
Yeah, the ordinance speaks directly to signs overhanging public right-of-way, and that they have to be a minimum height, so that, an average, David's pretty tall, but the average person wouldn't knock into it.
Right.
The only other specific situation that comes to mind is in front of the Friendly Barber Shop that's been there for years, if not decades. And I don't, that probably predates ordinance, you know. But that's one real-world situation in town.
That's helpful to know. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Jackie, and then Alex, and then Dan.
I noticed even in your letter, David, you acknowledged that you didn't think the parking on Carr Street was such a swift idea, or that you could see why we wouldn't think it was such a swift idea. For those of you that don't know, Carr Street is very narrow to begin with. There's a fairly substantial building going in the old farmers market parking lot, for which people, you know, regardless of how you try to make them go, people are going to be getting access to that up and down Carr Street. And then there are people, myself included, who live on Maple, and the people who live on Carr. It's a narrow street, and to have, if you say to people, okay, you can park on that side of the street, that's going to take up a substantial amount of the street, just as traffic on the street is increasing. And then folks are going to go ahead and park on the other side of it as well, because they'll think that's okay, and we can block it in. I think it's a really bad idea. It's going to be enough of a change for the community to have that building there, and then to have the access to the street gummed up a little bit, and have people's parking taken away will just add to the stress. But mainly it's because you've got the other big building going in the farmers market, it's no longer going to be just a little neighborhood street, and it can't carry more than that. And I'm worried not only about residents being able to get in and out, but the rescue squad needs to get in and out of there too sometimes. So it's just not, for many, many reasons, it's just not a good idea.
Alex.
Two things to start with. David, I'm assuming from the footprint that you've outlined that the projections would enclose heated space, square footage.
On the upper levels, not on the ground floor level.
Well, they don't project on the ground level. So right, for the where the projections exist,
there would be heated space.
Right. I'll just offer a couple of initial reactions. Based on that answer, I view those features as constituting a facade. And in my view, from a visual standpoint, those would be massive. Second, I think it would be very, very difficult to argue in the future, should such a feature be allowed as an encroachment into the airspace, that we would be able to argue differently in another case, and that it could be argued very easily that such features would be constituted as features and not the facade. Given that that is, in fact, as you propose it, actual heated square footage, which is part of the footprint of the building, from my standpoint, both aesthetically, in terms of how it would relate to the street, I don't think that's consistent with the guidelines that we've tried to establish for architectural character and how buildings relate to the street. And second of all, that does, in my view, constitute the facade. It's the facade pushed out, but that's the facade, and so that's where your right-of-way begins. That's where your footprint begins, and particularly given the fact that you've mentioned that there would be physical supports encroaching into the right-of-way as well. So my feedback would be I think you need to push it back, Dave. If you want to maintain those features, that you need to push the facade back. The relationship between the second issue, the relationship between the sidewalk and the planning strip and the street, those guidelines that we set forward were very carefully conceived. They're designed to create a public realm in which the pedestrian environment, the open pedestrian environment, relates directly to the activity in the building. As you have proposed reversing that, the primary public realm, being the street and the sidewalk, are then separated from the building
by the landscaping features, if you will. There are a couple of examples that where that has been done in town, and in our view, or the view of those of us who designed the guidelines for streetscapes, were unsuccessful in that the two instances would be at the walkway building, which is a great building. I mean, the structure is great, as well as the point building. Again, great structures, but they do not relate to the street. There's no activity. There's no interaction between the activity on the street and in the buildings. So we deliberately essentially jettison that that configuration for those reasons. So my feedback, again, I think is pretty clear. I don't see that reversal as being consistent with the streetscape designs that we've set forth as part of the downtown visioning project and the ordinances that have followed. I look forward to seeing how this is going to evolve. I think you've done a lot of really really nice work in terms of the footprint in general and how it relates to the surrounding streetscapes. But those two features, I have some pretty strong feelings about, because we spent a lot of time deciding, again, how facades relate to the streetscape in the public realm and how activity in buildings needs to relate to the activity outside of the buildings and in the public realm. So those are my two primary comments. But thank you for really, really appreciate your bringing this to us at this stage. This is a process that I think we are finding helps both the applicants, helps the board, and helps the public. So thank you, David.
I'm going to start with an anecdote that will relate to, it's quite getting to the question of the parking on Carr Street, which is my next-door neighbor has a new roommate who has been taken to the habit of parking in front of my house instead of theirs. And at first I was very annoyed by this, like, why are they parking in front of my house? And then I realized that, well, I was getting some traffic calming out of this. Every time Randy drives by in her little sports car, she slows down a little as she passes my neighbor's car. And that makes us all safer. So my question really is for Jackie, and just to put the idea out of, whether you've thought about the traffic calming effect of the on-street parking there, that would slow traffic down coming in and make things safer for your neighborhood.
That street is so little that it's hard to get much speed on it anyway. What I'm really worried about is the street getting clogged and people being able to safely get in and out of the street. And I certainly don't want the street widened to make room for that, because that would go right up into people's front yards. It's just there's going to be too much on that with this building and the new building that Carmel's building to accommodate that.
And
I just call the police when Randy speeds in my neighborhood.
Get out of town, guys.
Glad somebody else is going to get them for a change.
Let me ask this question. The staff in the agenda item here had suggested that a sort of compromise position, if the board was interested, could be to basically allow them to let me ask a question first. The property that the developer currently owns,
is the blue line.
Right. So the projections out that you've hypothesized there are within the area that they currently own. It's just that they have that basically our policies call for them to cede that area to us to be a part to become a part of the right of way. So just let me just point out, as far as the sort of considering all of the equities of the situation, they're not proposing to project out into what is currently our right-of-way. They're proposing to
project out into the right-of-way that they're being compelled to give us. And so the staff had proposed a compromise, a possible compromise position in which, well, maybe if the staff could comment on what the idea was.
Morning, since I think you're the author of that.
Yeah, page, top of page two of the abstract, it mentions an alternative idea, the possible modification of the adopted Roberson Street right-of-way plan. If I can go back to that. It's kind of hard to read on this PDF, but this note in the bottom corner says, when the plan is implemented, the overall right-of-way width and cross-section elements may be modified if necessary to minimize impacts to existing structures. Back during the public hearing when this right-of-way plan was adopted, that note essentially, as I remember it, came out of comments about existing buildings on the street, whether it be the Rescue Squad or Open Eye Cafe is located currently, that we wouldn't necessarily keep those buildings from being reused in some way. In other words, tear them down just to implement this right-of-way plan. So just the idea was that the note might be kind of modified further to essentially say that as long as the elements of the right-of-way plan are put in place, that some elements may be contained on what is private property. Where the idea came from, just at the staff level to throw it on paper for discussion, was during the original Old Farmers Market approval, which predated the approval of this right-of-way plan, the CUP was granted with, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I believe it was 5 feet of sidewalk in the public right-of-way and an additional 6 or 7 feet of sidewalk. You know, they had a nice wide sidewalk, but that last 6 or 7 was technically on private land, and it was approved that way. So this idea is essentially kind of potentially formalizing that.
Right. So
does that make sense?
Yeah. So basically the idea would be to say, well, you know, maybe we would allow, for example, 61-foot right-of-way if the developer would, and then the developer can build his 7-foot overhanging parts if the developer would agree to whatever, somehow formally dedicate an easement or whatever, however we would need to do it, in order to ensure that the public can walk through that area and underneath the overhang part. And the developer would be assuming responsibility for maintenance on that part that's on his property, I would assume. Is that, have I summarized essentially the idea that you were?
I think so, yes. The only thing I might clarify or ask the board for clarification on is whether, you know, what you just summarized, I would say there are two issues there. One is whether or not it could be contained at least partially on private land versus public land. And the second issue is whether or not you would find favor with the requested modification, which Alex just spoke to, I guess, negatively, if you will.
I'm leaving aside the modification issue for a minute.
Just
I'm,
the public-private right now.
Yeah, just talking about the public-private. And I just put out there that I'd be open to that as a way to address it. You know, it seems to me that I think it could be attractive what David's proposing there to break up the face of that building some, and if that's a way to achieve it without permitting them to build into the public right of way, which I have a real problem with, sort of the precedential issues on building into the public right of way. But it would be a way to achieve that. We still get the same fundamental profile that Alex and others helped develop a plan for. So
I've got like 3 questions. One, just for your proposal, are you contemplating that the town would receive some easement such that there's sort of no break if you're just walking down the street and you're a member of the public?
Yeah, and so they can't later on close that off or
right.
that okay. type of thing. Yeah. That's what I was imagining anyway.
Okay. I have some other questions, but I just want to ask that question.
Okay.
Then, and other people hadn't spoken, so I'll just wait till it goes around again for the other two.
We're going to go to John and then Randy, and we'll come back to you.
Go ahead, Randy. Mark. Two questions. If that projection would be an awning, what would the ordinance do? Allow that?
Awnings, I believe we, Mike, correct me if I say this wrong, if you know, but I believe we treat an awning essentially the same as a sign. They typically, not always, but typically do have a sign on them. I know we've reviewed some. Spotted Dog comes to mind and maybe a few others. And it's essentially, you have to receive permission from Public Works. And again, there are some standard, you know, minimum heights and fire retardant material because it's in the central business district and things of that nature. But as long as it is a certain height and you can walk underneath it, I don't believe it would be an issue, or I don't believe it is an issue currently.
Okay. And Mr. Bobbitt, how much square footage, of heated square footage, do you think the combined of the,
the
that
projection
will be?
The
overhangs?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I'm not sure at this point. It could be over 1,000. It could be 1,000. It could be 2,000, maybe.
1,000, 2,000. We're talking about tax dollars here. You know, this is. I mean, square footage that will be taxed.
Right.
And will help the town. So I'm trying to see the pros and cons of doing this. Okay. Thank you.
Randy.
The slide that shows, well, even if you look at this one, the sidewalk where it says there's a 7-foot, right there. Now, I want to be sure I'm clear. It is not continuous straight across the front of that building. Is that correct? There's three areas I'm thinking of.
That are overhung.
Yeah.
Well, this would be the property line right here, and the actual projections would come out this way.
So
and it would be open, but there would be columns supporting
right.
it out there. So that's probably the intent.
So it's broken. That. The colonnade is broken in sections.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering, as somebody who's run that street very often, and I usually run it on the north side because there's more space, but to have that on that north side, that colonnade is going to be, well, it's going to be very dark. Because the that's the north-facing side. I'm just wondering what, you know, what that's going to be like. I mean, I know this is only a concept plan, but I know that, you know, creating that on the north side is, I just thought was, is there something else in the design plan that will make it lighter?
Well, combination of the 5 feet and the 7 feet. I mean, we're actually giving more sidewalk than the 10 feet that we have over here. And it was just part of that. And we're part of, the intent was to bring people in underneath.
Okay.
And you're right, it would be dark, but all of this wall is going to be glass.
Mm-hmm.
At least conceptually right now.
I know, but the sun will be on the other side. But anyway, okay. I just
It would be dark anyway. Even if it
right.
weren't there.
Okay.
Back to you, Joel.
And this is a question for staff. And is the idea of having a consistent right-of-way, is it for sort of the human, what we talk about, I guess, human scale, or is it to have a feeling of visual, or is it a combination of both?
Well, I guess the easy answer would be a combination of both, though I'm not sure, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that on the spot. I might turn it back to the board in that the board chose to adopt it
right.
in this manner. Dale McKeel and others actually put it together, you know, prior to presenting it to the board. And I'm not really remembering exactly.
What was I thinking? Come on.
I mean, but
that's 3 years ago.
Based on what I heard you say, I would say a combination of both.
Okay.
I mean, again, that's probably the easy answer.
That's fine.
Yeah, I think Marty's answer is generally right. But what it was designed to, well, the other major feature that we were looking for was to be able to get on-street parking throughout the corridor, which would minimize the need for
again, acres of pavement on redeveloped properties. The other was to provide a right-of-way, given that we are allowing greater building heights, that would create a public realm that wouldn't be overwhelmed by the taller structures. Hence, my strong discussion warning to David about the need to provide that contiguous public realm out in front of the building in order for, we're trying to help you succeed, David, or at least I am, in order for that to be a successful relationship and a successful public space that will help your tenants and your building, all of those elements work together. And so, again, flipping that planning strip and paved public realm relationship really upsets that balance. It just doesn't work anymore.
Could you just go to the aerial photo just for a second?
That.
Okay.
That again, man?
Yeah, that's the one I want.
Okay. Without the footprint? Or the one with the footprint?
That one or the one back?
I want the one back.
One back.
Okay. That's all I want. Thank you.
Just speaking very quickly to the consistency issue, the Roberson Street right-of-way plan did grow somewhat quickly out of the old farmers market approval in that, you know, there was a request from, I would say, various business owners, property owners along that street to kind of, for the board to give a signal as to what they want to see, you know, so that there could be a consistent streetscape created.
Well, so that we're clear about as clear as we can be anyway, and giving David feedback, I don't think it sounds like a very good idea to have on-street parking along Carr Street. I agree with the points that Jackie was making about that. Is anybody else have any comment one way or another? We heard something from.
Yeah, I just have a question for David about your response to Alex's point. You know, if we.
What I was hoping was we would discuss the on-street parking and then very quickly right now and then
your return to these. Point.
Let's just go through them 1, 2, 3 real quick.
Your hope is granted.
The power of interruption. Does anybody have anything to add about on-street parking?
I mean, I don't have a problem with the concern that Jackie raised. I like to see on-street parking in these corridors. But the corridor that we really need to pay attention to is the Roberson Street corridor, and so if you know if it's in the interests of meeting the neighborhood's interests, I think Jackie's point is well taken.
Okay. So that's all the feedback you're going to get on that issue. And all right, now.
Basically, what's your response to? Or has it affect your planning to, you know, move the landscaping out by the back out by the road and have the sidewalk continuous out to the building?
Well, I understand Alex's point about making that the pedestrian realm, and it's a good idea. But I think when you park your car and you have a 5-foot landscape strip and you open your door and you step out, you're going to be stepping right into landscaping. So to me, I don't know how that's going to work.
I don't know. I guess my response to that is, I mean, done it both ways. I've walked on landscape and I've walked on sidewalk, you know, parking on the street, and it hadn't made that much difference. I've never even thought of it.
Well, it does make a difference. Most of the roots are right at the ground level.
Well, I guess I'm thinking, when I think of landscape, I'm just thinking of grass.
That's where your door gets stuck in that landscape.
No, I'm sorry. If you're talking about trees, you're right. It's a problem. But
it doesn't really matter. I mean, if that's what you want. But I think it would be better not to have the landscaping right there. It just doesn't seem like a workable situation. If you have shrubs, they're going to be trampled, trees. Get hit by car doors. To me, it just makes sense not to have it there, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
Frequently, a design feature that's used in those instances is that the planning strip is interrupted fairly frequently by small paved or bricked relief strips, if you will. I mean, whether that would fit into the ordinance or not, or into the design guidelines, as we've set forth.
Because if you look at this,
ways to deal with
if you look at this
screen buffer, right?
No, but if you look at the street, could you go back to the the Roberson Street aerial view. I guess this would be my only last comments. I mean, you kind of like, even though it's not the best greenery, the greenery that's there, because it does provide some mm-hmm. bit of break from asphalt. So, I mean, I'm almost at a Potter Stewart point now. Mm-hmm. I don't know when I see it, if I like it or not. So.
I'm loving how the answer he's looking for.
I know, okay. I'm sorry.
You have one, two, three, you have seven parking spaces along there. So you'd have potentially two doors per side, 14 doors opening out. Maybe not all the time, maybe just two-door cars, but I don't know that.
There's
no possibility of angle parking. I mean, does it have to be parallel to the...
Well, angle parking will take up a lot more of your right-of-way. And this was, you'd be projecting out into the actual road width. So I think really we just wanted a sense of what you all okay. thought, and I think we've got some good answers, and we could probably proceed ahead.
Yeah, I don't think there's, doesn't sound like there's a lot of support for changing the landscaping arrangements
yeah.
particularly.
Yeah.
Is anybody else sort of open to the possibility of the this compromise with respect to the width of the right-of-way and them dedicating some type of easement so that they could be accommodated on the overhangs potentially? What's your...
Well, it's just the concern that I raised earlier, which is that the overhangs, given that they are enclosing heated space, particularly given the fact that they're designed to... The design suggests supports encroaching on what would be the dedicated right-of-way. But we've got to remember that the right-of-way plan that we've adopted for Roberson is an adopted planning document. And so that is a matter of policy that we've established. And the extent to which this request is a deviation from that policy, I'm not really sure about what I've heard from Mike. But nonetheless, those overhangs as proposed here, in my view, comprise a substantial portion of the facade. 5 feet's pretty big.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't look very, very large when taken into the context of the overall footprint of the building, but the visual impact from, again, the public realm is substantial. Those features can be really attractive if they're back out of the right-of-way, if they are significantly visually encroaching the visual right-of-way. I think you're changing the public realm. I don't feel that strongly about it, but that's just a concern I have about how we set the tone for this for Roberson as it's redeveloped.
Okay.
Anybody want to add anything on that issue, Jackie?
Just that I really am not supportive of having the actual building encroach into the right-of-way, even if there is a, what to me would feel like a tunnel underneath it. It's simply, the building's not supposed to be there, and that's putting the building there except for one floor of it. And I don't like how it would look. It wouldn't fit. It seems like trying to get absolutely every square inch of building out of that lot as possible, which is your right, but it's my right to say don't encroach on the public realm.
Okay. Unless somebody has anything further to add on this topic, I think we're done. Thank you, David.
Is that helpful, David?
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks.
Sure. okay. Agenda item number 2, discussion of revisions to guidelines for selecting advisory board and commission members, unless the aldermen would like to take a short break.
Yeah, let's take 5. It's
5 minutes.
It is 9 o'clock.
Yeah, 5.
It's short break. 5 minutes. We're in recess.
That'd be fun.
Okay, if we can come back to order. We're resuming our Tuesday, April 18th, 2006, Club Road Board of Aldermen meeting. We're on, sad to say, agenda item number two. Okay. The board at its April 4th meeting discussed possible revisions to the guidelines for selecting advisory board and commission members, and the board delayed its decision on any changes until a work session could be scheduled with the chairs of the town's advisory boards and commissions. The board will discuss the proposed changes to the guidelines with the chairs at tonight's meeting. Okay. Are there advisory board chairs or members, for that matter, who wanted to speak tonight? Please come on up to the podium and address us.
I was really sweating for a while there. I was the only one here.
I took another one myself. I'm Joyce Morrell, chair of the Carver Recreation and Parks Commission. And I guess probably with the way members are selected at this point, applications, I review all applications that Sarah sends me. I get in touch both, try to get in touch by phone, and if I'm having troubles there, I send email if I have an email address and ask when a good time it is to, you know, call them or ask them to call me. And then invite them to our next meeting. The problem is, people will say, I'm going to be there, and they don't show up. I generally follow that up if they don't show up, saying basically, I'm sorry you could not join us, and our next meeting is, and this goes on. When do we stop? If you don't hear from them, when do you stop? And occasionally someone will say, I'm not interested anymore, or a lot of times with Recreation and Parks Commission, people, we aren't first choice. We're sort of down the way, and they will say, well, I got my first choice. But usually I don't know that. So if there was a way of knowing when they've gotten their first choice or second choice, depending on, so we don't waste that time expecting them to show up, and they don't come. I mean, recently, after about 6 months, I got response from a young lady who said, well, my schedule this semester will not allow it, but this had gone on for about 6 months. One bright spot is we had a person who showed up at our last meeting who said, if I don't get my first choice, I'll let you know, and I want to be a part of this, but I'll let you know either way, so I'm waiting to hear that. And then another person who had said he'd show up, and I was composing an email to him and got one from him saying I had child care problems and sorry I didn't get there. That was something real, real new. That doesn't usually happen. So I guess my question is, how long do we cure this, trying to get people to come to our meetings as the guidelines now state, and how do we get some feedback when they have been appointed to another commission?
A couple of issues that that I'd like to maybe ask and get some feedback from you on too is I understand you may want to, from what I understand, you want some clarification or enhancement of some of the information that you're getting from us regarding our choice of applicants. And so that, you know, if that is exactly the case, then you know that's fine. Okay, I don't have any problem at all with that. You know, I think you know since we are the appointees and you guys are really you're the people's representatives. You know you stand in their stead and you get to make those and ask those questions. One of the things I would like to see now, I'm somewhat in the same position as Doris, in that we have gone at times with vacant seats and no applicants. Now, I understand from other board chair that that's not always the case in others, and that some actually have multiple choices to choose from. And I would relish that that set of circumstances myself. I can think of only one time in my tenure on the board that would actually happen. What I would be interested in knowing is seeing how the board would feel about taking all potential candidates for all potential boards as a pool and see if there might be some possibility for combining people that express an interest maybe in the planning board, for instance, might also have an interest in Board of Adjustment. We deal with some of the same sorts of criteria, when there may in fact be, as I understand now, there's a number of people that have asked, or may even be surplus numbers of people that have indicated a preference for planning board for whatever reason. This is a personal preference thing. So I'm curious as to whether or not there might not be something there that the town could use to guide potential applicants from other boards to boards that need applicants. This is all within the public service realm for citizens, and if anyone interested enough in volunteering for any board is obviously the kind of person I want to talk to be perfectly frank, because we have in the past, as you heard Ellen come to you tonight, she was even asking if you guys would want to volunteer, volunteers are a lot of times very hard to come by, and time commitments on an ongoing basis is a lot to ask of people. So.
Alex, really, that's a really intriguing idea, Richard. Do you have an idea about how you would structure it? A notion that just comes to mind that I'd just like to get your reaction to. What if, for example, we receive certain applications, and the number of applications obviously don't meet up with the vacancies. Mm-hmm. Perhaps what you're suggesting that we would distribute, regardless of what preferences were selected, all of the applications to all of the board chairs.
Would that
be a mechanism you think might work for that? And then you guys, as the board chairs, then, if you're essentially in a dry fishing hole, then you've got a bigger hole to fish in, and then you could invite some of these other potential applicants based on what you read in their applications, mm-hmm. however you all want to handle that internally. I don't know how everybody else feels, but
I know you applied for Greenways, but the Cemetery Commission is really
I'm the chair of
it's still green. It's still green.
It's green, right?
We got an 8-month waiting list for Saturns. How'd you like to try a Toyota? that kind of idea,
Jackie.
The only problem I see with that is, it may not give people, one, to be on something that they're really interested in. Somebody may be very interested in human services. Say our new resident, John Edwards, puts in an application to be on a Carville Advisory Board.
He'd have to be on the ETJ because I don't think he's
okay, so he'd be on the ETJ. And what he's really interested in is... is the Animal Control Board. But because he's John Edwards, people want him on Human Services and Recreation and Planning. And so how are you going to make sure that John Edwards doesn't get all the bids? And then, brilliant little Joey Smith, who nobody's ever heard of but has some great ideas, never gets called except for the Animal Control Board. I think it could result in cherry picking among the board chairs and competition for John Edwards and making like little Joey Smith feel bad. And it's also like there's some boards that people really, really want to be on and other boards that same person might not want to be on. And I think when you're volunteering, you ought to have the choice of what you're volunteering for. So I can see where that's a very tempting idea. but you're not picking a whole group of you're not picking a whole group of apples. There are some plums thrown in there along with some raisins. You know?
And even prunes.
I like prunes.
May I make a comment? What I might suggest is rather than having it as a popularity contest or whatever, however you want to call it, might have the town or someone within the town do it, not necessarily anonymously, but rather than saying when someone applies for a board and specifies maybe only one board, is to encourage them, have the town encourage them, yeah, and say, look, you know that this may or may not happen at any time soon, and, you know, if you're interested in serving something, we can let you work with the town somewhere else and encourage these people to apply for more than one board and then use that as some sort of guidance. As I told Joel last week at our meeting, you know, my board is right now the Board of Adjustment, and I said I refer to us as a bunch of grumpy old white guys because that's what we are right now. You know, we are short members, and we in fact are only, you know, white males on that board. And I know one of the things you're very interested in doing, it's stated right up front, get some diversity, you know, cross sections of the community. And the only way you're going to do that is to ask these cross sections of the community to look at other situations and consider other choices.
David's really not that old, but Dan is next.
I did say grumpy old. Yeah.
My sense of both questions is that they're raising communication issues that would ideally be handled through the clerk's office. In the case of what Dara suggested, it seems pretty simple that if someone gets appointed and they're on the list for other advisory boards, that those chairs get informed, you know, this person's out of the running for that. And then in the other case where people, you know, are waiting for appointments where there are no openings, that, you know, a phone call or preferably an email that says you have applied to be on the planning board. There are no openings on the planning board at this time. However, we thought you might be interested to know there's an opening on the Board of Adjustment. Let us know if you want to. You do that already.
If more
information is given to them about those boards, right, that they get a better sense of what other boards are doing, they might have a little more interest in, you know, now, as far as I know, you know, a lot of the information about what that board or commission is doing is handed out at the point of first contact with the commission chair or their first meeting, and if some of that information could be done up front a little earlier.
So perhaps more info. Do you send information about the boards where there are openings? Or
I offer information. Sometimes they say, yes, please send it. Okay. Other times they just say, you know, I'd like to apply for the Recreation Parks Commission.
I wish.
Yeah, it does seem like it's potentially a lot of work, you know, to have to contact every applicant for, you know, one of the openings on the Board of Adjustment or wherever, and that, you know, we might want a standard of some at least minimal expression of interest coming in of the applicant, you know, that if they have their initial chance and then they're being told directly by the clerk that, hey, here's an opportunity for you, you know, if they're not biting, you know, maybe that's enough at that point.
The knowledge of when you know seats are closed, I think, is really helpful. I also think, Doris, your idea is exactly right, that if folks get a personal phone call, and maybe, you know, if Sarah calls is one thing, but when a board chair is able to call and say, these are the kinds of things that we're working on, come and join us, or at least come to a meeting and see what it's like to work on these issues. That's far more exciting than just knowing, you know, there's a laundry list of, you know, 13 other boards that you could select. So I think that knowing when the window is closed on certain boards is information that's valuable to go out to all the board chairs. I think knowing who remains in the pool is helpful, so that board chairs might look over applications and say, you know, Planning Board is full, but Board of Adjustment has some seats. Here's how I could call, you know, Citizen X and, you know, pitch it to them and explain how these are planning issues. That might be one way to get communication out about how vital these other boards are and get folks interested who may not have been. But I think citizens like to know that the choice they make first is valued as a first choice.
John.
I look at this issue sort of like the same way Alderman Brown looks at affordable housing. I think we really need to look at the zoning thing, at the big issue that to me is, and let me ask you that question right up front, what do you think are the barriers? I mean, you said there's a bunch of white males in the adjustment board, although they don't know how much fun they're missing, right?
Exactly.
And the same thing for you, Doris. I mean, I think the people who don't pick just number one choice, they just don't know how much what they're missing. And I think something that I'm truly concerned about is the lack of participation of the diversity of our community, and I think we all are. And I have been asking folks about these issues, and I would like to hear also your feedback, but I know that language is an issue for some immigrants, not just Hispanics, but all folks who live in Carrboro and pay taxes and would like to get involved, but can't understand what's going on or participate. Also, child care. I mean, there's a lot of folks that cannot participate because it's like I can't afford or I cannot leave my child with at home, you know, to take part of these meetings. Time, place of the meetings, dates, how often they meet. Transportation is an issue for a lot of folks who don't drive, especially if it's at night. And I think I know we can't change that overnight, but I think that if we do some attempts at dealing with some of these barriers, we might be successful at increasing that participation of folks. I mean, sometimes it's not lack of will, but it's not easy to, you know. I mean, I know of a lot of folks, single moms and dads who's just it's a luxury. They don't have the luxury to come to those meetings, and but they will come if, you know, maybe I mean, it would be good to pull them or ask them, you know, kind of what are the barriers that prevent them from participating. Do you have any feedback on that?
Well, occasionally we revisit our time and place. Well, not place so much, but the time of our meetings to see if that's a problem for people who are already there. So we would be willing to adjust our times, I think, if that was a reason someone who had a real big interest in being a part of that commission is given. I can't get there at 7, so could you put it back to 7:30? Or Monday's a bad night, could we try Wednesday? I think we'd be willing to do some adjustment there. But getting people interested, I mean, we have, I guess, we don't have very many people on our board right now. We have a lot of openings, but we have a somewhat diverse board. We have one African American and one Latino descent, so, and several whites. But so we have a little bit of diversity there. But I've talked with people trying to get them interested and applying, and some of them have reasons not to. But you know, I don't know what the answer is really.
Do you guys give cookies?
We could.
Good facilitation, yeah. And having some, you know, create a good environment with people, especially if it's at 7 o'clock. You know, some folks don't make it to the
meetings to 6:30 at night, and have the town
provide pizza and Cokes or something.
or a place for the children to play while the parents are...
I know we're anxious to move on, but just to throw out an idea, maybe we could try... Does Recreation and Parks attempt to recruit through participants in Recreation and Parks programs? All those people that take advantage of those programs and none of them want to
move on. It used to be a very good way of recruiting, but
well,
now
I was thinking that we might take some of our boards and see if we could have them meet at the same time and place, whether it's here or at the Century Center, and then get some high school kids who have to do community service hours. I don't mean as a punishment. Not as a punishment. Not as a punishment.
Vandalism.
Yeah, vandalism.
Yeah.
Service learning. Thank you. Thank you. Kids that have to do service learning hours and get them to staff like a group babysitting during meeting night. We might play with that. It might, you know, it wouldn't cost us any money. It'd be good for the high school kids. It could help us. And make sure we could, if I'm sure that there are some high school kids who are bilingual, and we could try to recruit them. And if there aren't, maybe we could create an internship for college kids, because every second one of those kids is bilingual now, and get a college kid to be like kind of the coordinator or the lead teacher and with the high school kids, and we could do that. I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Didn't we also talk, or maybe it was in the retreat planning meeting, about having almost like a advisory board job fair where folks can come around and find out what the different boards do, because I think part of the problem is folks in the community don't generally know what the boards do and how they might satisfy an interest they have in the community by being involved in the board. So we did throw that out at some point.
We should take advantage of Cargo Day and put out a display of advisory board possibilities.
I hate to commercialize it, but...
Hire a PR firm.
That was a very directed comment.
I ain't got no problem with a little salesmanship in this. And within that context, I haven't looked at the materials in quite a while, but as I recall, the materials that we have that describe what our advisory boards are and what they do is rather intimidating. It's not friendly. It's not inviting. It's not clearly encapsulated. Again,
no color pictures.
Again, I haven't reviewed it in a long time.
Right.
But I think just looking at those basic materials really bears some examination, and that it might be very useful to just have a clear, simple, inviting encapsulation of what all these boards are, what they do, and why they're important, and, you know...
And what makes them fun.
And what makes them fun. and even things that they're working on, which, that could get a little complicated because that would involve constant updating, so... It's just a notion, and Sarah's going, oh, God, and don't worry. But it strikes me that it might not be too difficult, again, to just put together a brochure, if you will, both paper and online, that presents an inviting series of opportunities. Just an idea. Yeah.
Doris, Richard, did you have any other feedback on the material that Dan had offered up as far as the chairs?
Well, that was one other question I wanted to ask of the board, really, was implicit in the question of asking for additional information regarding, you know, chairman choices and whatever, or chairperson, excuse me. I mean to be sexist. But implicit in that is the fact that maybe some chairpersons are not being quite as open and whatever. So what my question is there something here that we need to know about as board chair that is not happening that you want to happen? And is that what's bringing this about? Is that the underlying question here? Is there something as far as board, chair, vacancy selections are concerned? Are there boards that are abusing, certain things or whatever? If so, then this needs to be known so we can.
There's no implication at all that there's any problem in that regard whatsoever.
Okay.
The only interest that I have in putting this forward is so that for me, as an alderman, I can make the most informed, have the most informed understanding of the recommendation that's being made. And we've had several cases already just in the couple of months I've been on the board where there have been a number of apparently well-qualified applicants, and the board chair was recommending one of them. And for me, it raises the question, what about this person and this person? And, what is it? I understand, and I don't in any way doubt the chairperson's assertion that this person is highly qualified. But, there's sort of a question that's raised, what differentiates that person?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of to get at that. And also then, given that we're the ones being advised, and you made this point earlier, that, we may, when we then look at the information on this form, have a slightly different judgment or want to ask a question back to you. Well, I see you said such and such about this person. What do you think about? Mm-hmm. There may be something that comes to mind, further communication that takes place as a result of it.
Well, the reason I was asking about, the underlying question is that if there's a situation that could be clarified, such as one, either when a board chair wants to make a recommendation, if you want to ask the board chair to come before the board and have a couple of seconds or whatever, a couple of questions regarding this recommendation versus this recommendation, I'd see that as being perfectly within your purview, and I don't know that any board chair is going to object to doing that. Or if you would, something that might be done is to ask that in cases where there are those that happen to have the luxury of many people to choose from, maybe a short sentence or two as to why you didn't choose this person and you did choose this person, if just for some clarification. So, I see your point exactly, and I agree that maybe a little more information would be very helpful in settling your mind on approving the appointments.
Yeah, I don't think we're looking for any criticism of any of the applicants in terms of a reason why they weren't recommended. Okay. I think we're looking more like, what are the positive and affirmative aspects. But also, one thing that's not in our document today, but that's part of the overall proposal, is the idea that it would be the board liaison, the one of us who's the liaison, who would have a conversation with the chair to make sure that, say, if I'm your liaison, you don't have to come to the meeting, but I come to the meeting able to speak kind of to the recommendation that you're making.
Sure. And great idea.
That.
Very
great
good
idea.
And,
Yeah, make it easier for both the board and the board chairs, it might be that you would only need to use certain of these documents when you have more than one applicant. I mean, it seems to me if you don't have more than one applicant and that applicant is qualified, then I don't necessarily think, this just came to me, that when you only have one open seat or you have multiple seats and you only have one applicant, that you would necessarily need to fill this out. And that person is interested in being on the board. Because either you're going to – it doesn't make any sense to turn that person down because they're the only person that wants to do it. And unless they've, escaped from prison and somebody's looking for them, we ought to take them. Because they show an interest, I think.
That's where we are in recruiting.
I think it's great when you have more, because there's certain things that are more popular just because people perceive there's more fun in it. But
although, you know, under outstanding qualifications, all they wrote was only applicant.
Well, you wouldn't even put that, though. You wouldn't even have to put that, though.
No, you wouldn't.
I mean, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You would just, you know, have a little paragraph.
This person definitely.
Right. I mean, I'm for not having to fill out any paperwork that's not necessary after having done the family tax.
All right. I'm in favor of that.
So that would be my only suggestion with this.
Okay.
After hearing their discussion.
Right. So what do we.
I'll make a motion.
Oh, please do.
Okay. It's not exactly crafted to fit into all parts of this document, so I don't know if that means it's insufficient, but basically in regard to both. Well, there's three parts. One is that we didn't talk about this cover letter again tonight, but we did at length last time, that we adopt the cover letter as to the application as kind of a standard part of what's issued. So that would be the first part of my motion. The second would be that for both appointments to expire terms and to unexpire terms, that we add a clause, which I guess would be F in both cases, that says that the board chair shall, if there are more applicants than the number of seats that are open, that the board chair will fill out the summary of application forms and submit that with his or her recommendation. So that's the second part. And the third part, which is just what came up tonight, which is I think that the existing rules that we have imply that, or really state that the chair can only contact his or her applicants. So I would like to suggest an additional point under, again, both those appointment sections that says that if there are no applicants for the board in question, the chair may contact applicants who have applied for other boards. And that, but that I'm, you know, stating explicitly, there would only be if there were, in the case where there are no applicants who specified the board in question.
I second that.
Okay.
Is that clear enough for you all, Sarah, Steve?
Yeah. And do you mind changing all citizens to all residents?
Where do you
in
see
the
that?
Letter, in the formal letter.
It's in the cover letter.
The cover letter.
Yes, all residents.
So it's being suggested.
Yeah,
that
I have this long-standing habit citizen of using the terms interchangeably. So.
I know.
Oh, well, but no.
Citizen of the world, right?
Okay. So we're changing the word citizen to resident. It's changing the motion.
I have something to say after we vote.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is perhaps a little bit more a matter of substance. I have no problem at all with the general notion that we should try to get a better sense of you know, how the chair made the decision they made, particularly in the case of multiple applicants. Something that gives me a little bit of discomfort is the term qualification that is being used in the summary. In that any resident is, in fact, qualified. What qualifies one to be a member of our advisory board is to be a resident of our community and to show interest. Mm-hmm. And that what I think it's important to have expertise in areas, but part of what we're trying to achieve through ultimately what we're really trying to achieve through diversity is not some sort of cosmetic notion, but a rainbow of perspectives, if you will, and that rainbow of perspectives also includes a variation in the experience that people have in dealing with these issues. Mm-hmm. And that
can I cut to the chase and make a suggestion?
Yeah.
What if we said, instead of summary of qualifications, candidate profile?
Works for me. I had other language, but yours is better.
Could I say one thing? In listening to Mr. Coleman, I hadn't heard him say anything about how long we should keep contacting people who have put us, you know, on their list before we decide they aren't interested in us and give up.
Twice.
It's up to you.
So, Jackie, when you say twice, do you mean two appointment cycles?
No, I mean...
Two phone calls.
Two phone calls or emails. I mean, you know, if Doris calls this person and they say, yeah, I'll be there, and they don't come, and then she calls them again and they say, yeah, I'll be there, and they don't come, you know, sometimes you got to kind of, you know, take a hint. And then we'll probably be there not interested. So I think after...
Take a hint or think they're going to be absent too much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'd say two contacts from the board chair.
As sort of minimally.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind putting in the guidelines that the chair should be in contact with me to let me know the status.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't know and
right.
You don't know. I mean, we just need better contact.
Okay. Put that in there.
Okay.
Well, we're at this issue. I'm not, nothing. I don't want to derail anything. Just want to ask the question, what do we do if a Spanish-speaking, for example, applicant says, I really want to, you know, I'm a landscaper, I know about water conservation, or I'm interested in these issues, but my English is not that great, but I really want to be part of your commission. What do we do? What did you tell them?
I'd love to help you practice your English.
I don't know. Is there someone, you know, available who could help us with some
John, how about this? What if, I mean, obviously we don't have a mechanism set up to deal with the specific situation, but that if there is an applicant who is interested where language is a barrier, that the chair would should, as a formal matter, inform staff of the matter and inform the board so that the board or staff can try to find a way that we can include that person. Would that work? I mean, just given what we have set up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Would that work for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really don't have any resources of our own to fall back on to deal with, such as having a bilingual individual, you know, that's going to come to all of our boards and sit through all of these meetings, you know, in this particular case. So,
if
it's a situation that we can't handle,
if there's somebody who wants to participate and that's a barrier, then as the case arises, that staff and the board be made aware of it, so that we, you know, then we need to deal with that situation and see if we can figure out a way that that person can participate, mm-hmm. but that you're not behind the eight ball and it doesn't just get dropped. That's what I'm thinking about.
I don't mean to be unsympathetic to that point, but you're getting late. We have a motion on the floor. Did we incorporate all of the different?
John, are you wanting that incorporated into the motion formally? The point about the point Alex made about
To simplify it, simply that the chair will contact the staff to attempt to accommodate
non-English
speaking.
That would then be added into the appropriate place.
I'm actually stuck on the word profile. I'm sorry. Is there another?
What's wrong with profile?
I'm just not comfortable with it.
What she's thinking about.
I'm
the wrong kind of profile.
Right. it never sits well with me, and I really. I hear you, but profiles and courage. perhaps candidate highlights or something that, you know.
How about candidate summary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. That is
right.
Fine.
As bland
Thank
as
you.
We can get it.
There you go. And
I think
summary.
Okay.
Works for me.
All right. So now we.
Richard Doris, that work for you guys?
Are we good
to
go with those tweakings?
How about summary of profile qualifications?
I'm going to call for this question.
You guys keep Didn't hear a second on that. So, all those in favor of the candidate summary motion?
Aye.
All those opposed, letter passing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
It's now 9 o'clock.
No, somewhere.
No, I mean, because
it's 9 o'clock.
Item number three.
Mr. Manager, item number three, review of architectural services request for qualifications for design and construction management of fire station number two.
Purpose of this agenda item is to review the request for qualifications, or RFQ, that's to be distributed on behalf of the town requesting a submittal of letters of interest and statements of qualifications from qualified architectural firms for the design and construction management of the fire substation to be located on Homestead Road. The draft RFQ you have in your packet is a fairly standard.
Looks like I want to remove the item.
Well, wait a minute.
Well, it's open for discussion.
Okay. Jackie.
I have several things with this. One, just to show you that it can be done, passing out some pictures of Mebbin's fire station.
How much did it cost?
I don't know, but pictures? They can't be poorer than us. I mean, they can't be richer than us.
I don't know about that. No.
You know what I mean. I don't think it's... I think that they are cognizant of what things cost. No, they're different.
Okay.
What about me?
Well, I was going to give them to you when they came back. Because I didn't want you to get your germs while I'm giving everybody your germs.
You're right. You're right. I got to keep them to myself.
We have the fire station. We have the central center.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'd also like to ask that if in the RFP we can add language about the fire station being in harmony with the surrounding area, that the project suggestion suggests that the fire station should be in harmony with the surrounding neighborhood and compatible with civic buildings both in downtown Carrboro and with the buildings in the surrounding neighborhood. And then I'd also like to ask, this is kind of a big deal to hire this person, and I don't think it's fair to put the whole selection on staff. And I'd like to ask if a member of this board should sit on the committee that's going to select the three firms that are referred to the board. I mean, that's generally what we do when we're selecting consultants or architects or anything.
Let me just say, and you all free to do whatever you want to do, but the suggestion is not that we bring three firms to the board, but that we would bring a recommendation to the board. You'd have all the names and qualifications of all the firms, but the idea was not to present three firms.
So the staff intends to narrow
because
down to
then
one
that was recommended. That was candidate. The recommendation.
Okay. Which might actually make Jackie's point perhaps even more important.
Yeah.
As far as putting in.
Yeah, I would prefer that this board have some folks to choose from rather than just one. And I think because it's kind of a big deal and it's a big responsibility and there are things that can go wrong with this, and I think when something is happening where things can go wrong, a member of the board needs to be there to kind of take the heat and for the board to be involved in it. I don't think it should be so essentially this would be just a staff decision. And I don't think that should be the case. I'd like to see a member of this board being on the committee that selects the person, and I would like us to have more than one person as a choice, simply because that's more comfortable.
Well, let me just ask, whoever the selection committee is going to be interviewing the firms, if we bring three firms, everybody will not have interviewed the three firms. So I'm not sure how you'd base the choice other than what's in writing. Would you be comfortable with a first, second, and third recommendation so that there were three coming, but there would be a preferred recommendation?
Well, to begin with, I want to see a member of this board on the committee
that
makes that decision.
Let's just stick to that topic for just 1 second. Does that seem like a good suggestion? Are people open to that?
Well, the only problem with that is that you know there are only a certain amount of us that are going to be able to do that because of where we work and how we work. And so if that's going to be the case, then I want some standard, you know me, I like some standard questions asked of everybody if that's going to be it.
Some objectivity.
I want some objectivity mm-hmm. because we're not all going to be there at the process.
Right.
I mean, let's be frank, I can't come an hour away to every staff meeting
which I think I would feel like if I were doing a good job, would be able to do it. So, you know, I'll get to some other points about the, I don't have a problem with the harmony or anything like that, but it's got to be affordable. We can't afford to build a Taj Mahal fire station because we ain't got the money.
I don't think Mevin built a Taj Mahal. I don't think Mevin.
Well, I want to know how much they spent on that one.
That's also got four bays.
Yeah,
we're only looking at having two bays, so it's much smaller anyway.
No, we got to write a check, and we got to pay for it, too.
Okay.
You know.
It could be alabaster on the lower part of it.
It can be done.
Okay.
It's a great thing.
Alex.
I agree with Alderman Brown. The first principle should be achieving harmony with our budget and the other principles too. I mean, to me, I think this is a staff decision. I mean, I think we should set the policy and the criteria of what we want to see, and I fully trust our staff to make the right decision and ask them. I mean, if we have to bring choice 1, 2, and 3 because of, again, I don't know. That's what we pay him the big bucks to do, and you know, not that I don't want to take the heat for anything. We all want to take the heat, good or bad.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that's right.
I think we make the choice to pick the best staff person, and I think they should bring us the best. And
a part of this person's responsibility will be to conduct a charrette. Anyway, okay. I can see I'm not getting anywhere with this.
I think we should set a policy rather than I don't want to do staff work.
It's not staff work. Anyway, I think we have some differences of opinion on board staff jobs, but
availability.
Let me try this. I think, Jackie, the points that you made, the items that you put forward about some guidelines for the architects to follow or to observe in how we want the project executed, I have no problem with that language. In fact, I think that's good guidance because that will tell people, you know, what they're expected to do in terms of understanding what the local vernacular is. Sorry. Standards are desirable. We're going to start buzzword bingo here in a minute, gang. however, in the lessons learned department, when the board became highly involved in the selection process of an architect last time around, while the ultimate product is great, how we got there was decidedly rough. And the extent to which the board's dabbling in the selection process can be attributed to that, I can't say. However, I would suggest that, I think John encapsulated it well, that we just need to define our criteria clearly and then move forward with the staff selection process as has been recommended. But using, again, in including your criteria regarding architectural sensitivity as you phrased it, I will include that in the motion, which still hasn't been seconded yet. But
is this a precedent for any time that we hire, like, a consultant or somebody to work on a major project, that the board's not going to be involved in selecting that person, that it's going to be the staff, and the board will simply sign off on the staff's recommendation?
Well, now, do you say sign off? If I don't, I think I got enough sense to know that if I don't want a particular architect, that I can look at the design. I think, you know, I don't even know if the board has some sort of concept of what kind of fire station they want. We all assume that we may want a fire station like that.
That's not what the fire station looks like. It's who the architect is, what their experience is. If we feel that they are in keeping with the personality of the town, if we feel like they would be, like, qualified to do a charrette, I mean, we're not always on the same page as staff. There are some differences in viewpoint.
Well, let me ask you this question. If we get someone who can obtain the information from the residents, and I'm not just talking about the residents that live on Homestead Road. I'm talking about all the residents. Because if my house comes on fire, I want everybody from the fire station to come, not just like the one down here.
I'm hopefully not going to set my house on fire again. they'll talk to you about that. I've followed the tradition of Mr. Caldwell. But, you know, I prefer the process of saying this is what we want and these are the guidelines we have. Because, I understand some of the process for the previous building was not as, there may have been different choices made about the architect had the process been different. And I don't think it sets a precedent if we decide you bring us the top three, these are the guidelines we want for the people who do it. I mean, you know, there are certain limitations with this particular building. It has got to function as a fire station. Now, I'm not expecting the staff to come back with an architect that gives us a cinder block looking fire station. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think the sense of what we're looking for, everybody knows. There's town hall, there's downtown. There's a way to present it where we have the control. We don't necessarily sign off on anything that staff does unless we agree with it. I mean, this is Carrboro.
but does this mean that the board will not be involved in other times when we go to hire a consultant? I think that's a big issue.
For me, it depends on what it is. In the case of building and constructing a fire station, I think we can set the guidelines and say, you know, I don't really want to be involved with the consultant if you know what I want. Because I think if we're going to have a board member participate, then we need to have a pre-discussion about what is the common consensus about what we want with the fire station. Because there may be different consensuses. You have two people who are like, it's got to be affordable. I mean, I care what it looks like, but at the end of the day, it's got to be functional and affordable.
It's got to be functional.
Harmonious with the budget.
You know? There's no need of us bankrupting ourselves for a fire station. And I want a fire station. I've wanted one for a very long time. So it's a matter of comfort level. And for a fire station, which is utilitarian to me, for want of a better word, it's not something I need to participate
in. I'm hearing you.
Okay.
All right. Dan? Yeah, I guess I have a suggestion, which is, if I'm reading this correctly, there'll be a maximum of three firms interviewed, and I assume that means one interview per firm, and that those will be scheduled pretty soon and within a fairly concise time period, given the schedule it's outlined. So I wonder if we can resolve this question by asking staff, once the interviews are scheduled, to let us know when those are and if there's a board member who can make the time available and to attend and be part of the interview team, that we could then do that and kind of like, you know, leave it sort of open-ended at this point.
Or tape record them so that we can listen to them. They don't have to videotape them, just tape record them so we could listen to them.
Is it?
Give us copies of concept plans.
Either of those sound like pretty happy compromise. Mr. Manager, do you have any reaction to that?
We can do whatever. I've done it over the years many different ways, and, you know, and I've been involved in $30 million projects that staff made the recommendations on. I've been involved in small projects of under $1 million where there were elected officials and staff members. We felt like with this kind of facility, it's certainly a very important facility for the community, but there are only so many ways you can do the functional piece of the fire station. And I think our staff is smart enough to get a sense of what the board wants and what the community wants and can afford. And these things are coming back to you all. It's not like this is going to be done in some vacuum. The decisions will all ultimately be this board. So if you want to record them, if somebody wants to sit in, however you all want to do it.
Alex?
If that had satisfied the interests, I still have a great deal of hesitancy and the board becoming involved in the process of hiring a design professional to design a purpose-built structure. It's very limited in scope. I mean, Travis is the guy who knows what needs to happen here, and obviously Jackie has outlined some aesthetic characteristics that I think the entire board can agree with. I think that's adequate guidance to staff.
But we will have input at other points in the process. So
and let me just also add, in the scope in the RFQ, we've mentioned that very early on we would expect the selected architect to do this public design charrette, and so that's another checkpoint to make sure that that it's a community facility that fits what the community's vision for it would be.
All right.
Okay.
So moving on to another topic. Were you done with your list?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. I just wanted to add a point about utilizing life cycle costing for energy systems for the building, if that's at all, if that's possible. Life cycle. So that we look at the cost of the energy system over the life of the building. And, you know, therefore that will...
Not just what it costs to build, but what it costs to build and operate
and fuel
when you have to replace it. And
Just as a caution, that was done in the last go-around. Unfortunately, when the initial recommendations were made about the HVA systems that would satisfy some of the criteria that were set forward, it was a sticker buster, if you'll recall, and we had to back off of those recommendations and do the HVAC design again. So... certainly that should be an aspect that's taken into consideration, but obviously within budgetary constraints. Do you have any problem with that?
No.
Okay.
So is there a motion?
So moving the item with the addition of Jackie's language regarding the architectural characteristics and Dan's language regarding the life cycle energy analysis. Is there anything amiss?
Okay. So the matter's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. We're on to agenda item 4.
Item 4 is a report on possible revisions to the duties of the Appearance Commission. On March 7th, the board requested that staff prepare an agenda item to allow consideration of amending the land use ordinance to revise the duties of the Appearance Commission to include design issues. A resolution accepting the report is provided.
Chris, do you have any comments?
The report's fairly straightforward, yeah. I think.
Let me turn to the board. Jackie.
In the report, I think one of the requests that Mr. Bryan had made was that the word design be included in the description of what the Appearance Commission does. And staff seems to take a pretty strong position not to do that, which I don't quite understand. But I think that adding design into the description of the Appearance Commission's powers, particularly at this point in time, and this is not Mr. Bryan, this is me, particularly at this point in time, is very important. The role of the Appearance Commission is about to change slightly and increase as more development happens downtown. The Appearance Commission is going to be asked specifically to look at this and to look at it from a design guidelines perspective. And so not to include that language in their description of what they're supposed to do, I'm afraid, could have the unintended consequences of further down the line, like 10 years from now, we're not here, staff's, you know, working in Durham or something, and folks could say, oh, well, that's not in the Appearance Commission's job description to actually make sure that things are living up to design guidelines, design standards, whatever we come up with. So for those reasons, I feel it's really important to have it written into the description of what the Appearance Commission does, that they evaluate design issues to make sure that town standards guidelines are being met.
I would just agree with that.
Thank you. So could we have a revision of, could we
please ask staff to bring back to us a revised description of the Appearance Commission's duties with design, with responsibility for reviewing design as it reflects town standards or guidelines?
That's a motion.
Then you've got a second.
Thank you.
Okay.
So just for clarification, is that primarily or exclusively focused on the issue of their duties that speak to making recommendations upon permits or other items referred to them by the commission, as opposed, you know, the whole series of other general duties? But
starting here.
Basically, I'm just asking where you want to add the word design.
I think it's worthy of a separate line, maybe a new five that would say to review recommended projects or review referred projects to determine if they are in keeping with town design standards, guidelines, or, yeah.
Okay. So it's focused on permit development permit issues primarily.
Yeah. And okay. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't do all the other things it's doing. This is another thing that.
No, I understand that. I was just trying to decide whether you wanted it sort of generally or more specifically, and you've answered the question. Okay.
And old number five. Does this
old number five
assume that persons who are non-commissioned members have a vote? I'm only asking that so it can be clear for people who are non-commissioned members who participate in the discussion, but understand that they do not have a vote.
Well, I would assume that when a advisory board appoints an advisory board to it, that advisory board to it would make recommendations to
the advisory
board. To the advisory board who would then vote on it.
Okay.
Kind of like our advisory boards do.
Okay.
That's what the language says.
Okay.
It says.
Yeah. I just want to be sure.
Yeah.
I think I read it.
Advisory groups to advise and assist the commission. So I don't think there's anything implicit.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I just want people to have the right, the correct expectation.
Sure.
That's
right.
All.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we make that change with the word design.
Thank you.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
That will be coming back to you to set public hearing on it because it's a latest amendment.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Confirm.
Okay. Are there any matters from the staff? If not, are there matters from the board? Do you want to?
I have something.
Okay. Just a moment. Dan. And
I have a motion to make, which is that we appoint to the New Horizons Task Force the six people whose names Sarah will now give us, and since they're not in our place, and that we keep applications open one more week and make further appointments next Tuesday if additional applications are received. Can you state the names, please?
I'll second that. That's what I was going to say.
Well, can I see the applicant first?
I have
she's got
the list.
Right.
I just have these up.
Thank you. Do I need to state the six names for the motion, or can I just say?
That would be nice for the public.
Okay. They are, thank you. They are Mary Rabinowitz, Laura Van Sant, Charles Buckner, Laura Wenzel, Lydia LaBelle, and Peggy Vincent.
We thank them.
Yes, we do.
To keep applications open for another week?
More week, yeah. And that's what I was going to say. I'll second that motion.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded. What are we doing? We're appointing these people?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion passed unanimously.
And let me just add, I don't think we mentioned this in our last meeting, that the first meeting of New Horizons is set for Monday, May 8th at the Homestead Community Center at 7 o'clock.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you all. Jackie?
I had just one thing. A couple months ago, I brought up the concern that as construction starts happening downtown, there are several sites where stuff's going to be popping fairly soon and could be simultaneously. We need to come up with a plan for how we're going to handle that, because there's going to be a lot of construction traffic, a lot of construction noise. We don't want to shut down downtown for construction as we're trying to improve it. And I don't know what that plan would be, but I don't want us to not have thought about it. For one thing, managing the time of construction traffic will be really important as we're dealing with traffic flow issues. Enforcing our downtown noise ordinance, not our downtown noise ordinance, our construction noise ordinance will be real important to the surrounding area as businesses try to function. Making sure that that environmental regulations are put in place. But really, I guess my major concern right off the bat is the one of construction traffic. And if we have two or three major construction sites downtown happening simultaneously, that could become a real nightmare unless we give it some kind of forethought. Maybe that is this not a problem, or
I don't want to wait until it's a problem.
We did have some discussion about this in with the staff, and I can't remember what we concluded from that.
I know we've talked about it. I guess I think it's an issue. I think one of the concerns is until you know exactly what it is that's going to be happening, it's sort of difficult to plan a specific plan, if you will, because we don't know. You can't lay out a construction traffic plan unless you know what construction's taking place.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think that we could look at, you know, when we permit a project, making sure that included in the permit are very specific regulations that the subcontractors are supposed to follow, and that they understand that when they sign one. Things about, you know, maybe there are some roads that we don't want construction traffic on at given times. Maybe we don't want construction traffic on Greensboro Street between 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning. Maybe we want to make sure that all trucks coming to and from are covered, that construction sites are kept neat. That, I mean, just if we can include, even if they're simply our own regulations and we don't have any new ones, but if we can make sure that that's very specifically spelled out and that the subcontractors understand it as well as the builders, that we can kind of forestall some problems.
Okay, well, that's different than what I thought you were saying earlier, which is we developed some traffic plan on yet-to-be-determined buildings.
Well, I said a plan for how we're going to deal with all of the, I don't want to say chaos, all of the energy that's going to be going on downtown. Yeah, and a lot of that is going to be traffic issues. And so if we can't come up with a traffic plan before it happens, maybe we can come up with a way of spelling out in the permitting process what we expect as far as hours of construction traffic, those sorts of things. No? Okay. Well,
big burning mulch piles.
No big burning mulch piles.
Okay.
When we start hearing from citizens, it ain't me.
Okay. There is one matter that some of us would like to discuss with our attorney and attorney-client consultation in closed session tonight. So
if I could.
In what category does it fall under?
Privacy procedures. Of
the police and immigration issues.
It would have to be matters within the attorney-client privilege, seeking legal advice about a legal matter that, as between attorney and client, we could discuss. And I will let you know if it goes beyond that, we won't be doing it.
Okay.
So you want all of us to go into closed session, or
yeah,
just okay?
Yeah.
And the attorney says
so
it's an okay thing.
Well, I'm not.
You won't know.
You won't know
until
we get there.
Yeah.
So if we're not
right
there, we'll just open up.
That's right.
That's right.
There
so
you go.
Move.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of going to closed session signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed. Matter passes unanimously. If all of you will excuse us.